All right. Several weeks back, we said that we were going to spend some time talking about elders. We have done that for a few weeks, and we'll continue to work through some things, and then eventually we'll head over towards the book of Acts. But today we'll want to look at a subject which I think is important as well, pitfalls for elders. And not just elders, I mean, some of us may never serve in that way, but there are pitfalls for anybody who's a Christian, and for elders sometimes those can be amplified a bit. So if you will kind of scan down the 8 points with me, you'll see the things that we want to talk about in this class. Communication, hypocrisy, motivation, failing to delegate, anxiety or worry, being unwilling to, their willingness to forge ahead with the plan even though it looks to be bad, trying to solve spiritual problems with secular tools and ideas, and then failing to be impartial. So these are the things that we want to discuss in today's class, the first of which is going to be communication. When we think about our world, failed communication is a big issue, is it not?
Yes.
Where do we see problems with it?
Just about everywhere.
All right. That's right. I mean, you could just pick on any sector practically and say, failed communication here, we see some problems resulting from it. If we try to be a little more specific, what will we say? Failed communication. All right. You think about in the home. Kids feel like mom and dad don't understand. They're not communicating. Husbands and wives, you know, the wife said he just doesn't listen anymore, we just can't communicate, we're not talking, those kinds of things, and the marriage enters into a state where it's in trouble, or maybe they're headed to divorce court because they just feel like there's been a breakdown in communication, or else. All right, if an employer is not communicating what he or she wants, it's a problem, isn't it? I mean, we're not mind readers typically, so sometimes we can guess, and sometimes we have a sense of what needs to be done, but and the same is true. If an employee is not communicating with an employer, there's probably going to be some difficulties in that relationship. Where else? Communication issues. What about when it comes to the political environment? There was a report a few days ago as far as some Russian bombers heading into Alaskan airspace. You know, when you have one country, whether it's in the air, or whether it's in the sea, or whether it's on land, and you start sending troops over to a particular area that's either really close to where a country's borders are, or maybe inside the borders, and you don't give any kind of advance warning, you think that can stir some stuff up? Yeah, let's fire up the nukes. You start the old countdown. Well, you know, you need to make sure that some people are on board as far as what's taking place, otherwise you can end up with a catastrophe. Bombs can start going off, and you've got planes that are dropping military hardware, and it's just really bad. So communication is a really important thing.
We see one of those things going on right now all around the country with blacks and whites, police and things like that.
Yeah, they feel like there's been a breakdown in communication. You don't understand our wants, our needs, our desires, and here's how we're going to communicate with you. We're going to loot, and we're going to do all the things that we've seen. So again, communication is a fundamental part of our world, and we would also expect that it's going to have a big impact in the church. When we think about elders, what kinds of, here's 1B, what kinds of things should elders be communicating to the flock that they serve? Stan?
Could I back up to the first point?
Sure.
We look at a lot of times that the problem is a lack of communication, and it is. Communication is a difficult area. There's people who spend days, hours, years studying communication. But it seems to me like one of the biggest problems we've got with communication, which wasn't brought out, is intentional miscommunication. And we see that almost as much as we see lack of communication. And I think that really comes into play when you're talking about religion.
Yeah, and it is a big problem. Now, we hopefully wouldn't find that too often in the church, but when you think about communication, that is going to be a factor that creates a lot of difficulty. Okay, bearing that in mind, 1B, what kinds of things should elders be communicating to a local congregation? All right. If the elders are leaders, if the elders are shepherds, then we would expect that there's going to be some things that they want to tell folks. That's certainly going to be important. What else? All right. They're certainly going to be interested in communicating things related to Scripture. Anything else?
Well, you've got the goes along with the Scripture. they're going to be seeing what the congregation needs as far as class goes.
Okay.
What's going on in the congregation? So they got to organize what's going to address maybe some problems and what's going to address maybe something to build them up to make them realize what this is all about.
There's going to be positive and negative communication that's taking place. There's some issues that we need to address as a congregation. We become lax in this area. We have a problem over here. And you need to have leaders that are going to do those kinds of things. Positive things as well. If you never hear anything positive from your employer, never hear anything positive from your husband or your wife, how are you going to feel? People generally like some feedback. Now, that comes in varying degrees. Some people, you know, a little feedback, you know, maybe a few times a year, you know, a couple months out of the year, those kinds of things, that's enough for me. Other people feel like they need feedback on a regular basis. So again, that's going to kind of vary a little bit. But if you never get any feedback, especially never any positive feedback, that's a bad thing. So elders, you know, communication. Sometimes you'll find a congregation, they have a yearly meeting. They will go ahead and maybe it's a meeting with the men, maybe it's more of an open meeting, those kinds of things. But the elders will say, this is what we've done, this is what we're doing, this is where we had to, this is where we're heading, and we want to share this information with you. We want to communicate these things with you because, you know, we're all in the same group here.
I think elders should let the congregation know they're approachable too.
Yes. Again, that's another aspect of communication, that if there's some things that you want to discuss individually, if there's some things that you want to discuss with the eldership, you know, we're open. Our door is available. What about finances? You can be in a congregation where you have no idea. Are we meeting budget? How's the money being spent? I mean, it's like being with the CIA, practically. I mean, there is just a lock on the information, and you're not getting any information. So, again, you may want to make sure that that information is not put out for the general public, but still, you know, if you are trying to shepherd that flock, those are some things that you want to take a look at. Stan?
Well, it's very specific, but what we had happen here a few Sundays ago, it is something that, had we had elders, I wouldn't have expected them to really be in close communication with the congregation as to what was happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't, but we try to do that through the business meeting, and a sermon was used to try to express things. Bulletin article was put out, those kinds of things. But yes, when you have some unusual circumstances, again, that's the time to be very, very clear to say, you know, this is at least how much we know. We may not have every detail. We don't know every fact, but trying to prepare people for that kind of thing. All right, C, discuss ways elders may fail to communicate with the flock, whether that's one-on-one or whether that's an eldership. We touched on that just a second ago a little bit, but how can they fail to communicate?
They keep it themselves.
All right, somebody comes up and asks about something, well, that's an elder's matter. Well, there may be some times where that needs to be true, but there are certainly some times where elders have said that over the years where that's not something that needs to be, you know, kept within the eldership. You know, again, we're not the CIA, you know. We're a flock of God's people trying to do what's right, so there should be a good flow of communication there. What else? Ways that elders may fail to communicate.
You just said it, the finances, not knowing where
all right. That's it. What if elders, you know, give the impression individually, collectively, that they're not approachable, to go back to Ray's point? Are they going to likely fail when it comes to communicating? Man, we don't want to talk to those guys. You know, our head got bitten off last time. We know better than to talk to him or them. So approachability is going to be a big thing, right? That can be a problem in marriages too, can it? The husband has this great plan and he's doing this, that, and the other thing. And what's he assume? Oh, my wife knows all about everything. Well, he gets home and mama's not happy. For what reason? She didn't know. You know, maybe none of it, maybe most of it she was unaware of. But the husband made that assumption. It can happen in the workplace, it can happen in the school, it can also happen in the church. That elders assume, well, you know, we've had announcements and we've had bulletin articles and we've had all these other things and this has been planned for a long time and we're assuming that everybody is on board, everybody knows. Don't make that assumption because it can be a very, very unwise thing. Anything else? Ways that elders fail to communicate. Okay. Let's pick up then with point D. Offer some ways in which shepherds, elders, pastors might offer effective communication. I mean, if you're the leader of the group, there are some things that you need to communicate. Items that we've listed and some I think that we probably overlooked, but how are you going to effectively communicate to the flock?
Get up in front of the congregation.
All right. Sometimes it's going to need to be a public announcement. And you may, if we had elders, and as we're going through some of the protocols that we're looking at as far as weather and, medical emergencies, violence emergencies, sometimes you just got to, that's the way the corporations do it, isn't it? You sometimes have an employee meeting and the CEO or the manager, the foreman gets up and says, okay, it's Friday afternoon. There's some things that we need to talk about. There's some things that we need to communicate. So publicly, would you ever have a situation where elders might need to go to houses privately? Sometimes it's better just to deal with one-on-one, and you might go family by family, house by house to communicate some things because that's a better way to do it. How else might you communicate?
Through the pulpit.
Okay, an elder might preach a sermon. They're dealing with, in a particular congregation, a specific situation. The elder says, this is what we want to communicate, so here's a sermon that wants to be preached by an elder today. Well, okay. Or you might have two or three elders. Each one takes, maybe it's a real complicated thing, and each one takes 10, 15 minutes to present some information. What about, and we haven't seen this typically in our part of the country, but down south you'll see it some, you have a large congregation of 300 or 400 people, the elders column. Anybody ever see that in the bulletin? Oh, come on. Nobody? At least a couple people. The elders column. There will be in the bulletin, and maybe it's a bulletin that has four or five pages, but the elders will take out a little section and they will have some information every week. Now, if you're not reading it, well, then, shame on you. But that's a place where elders can focus on a piece of information, or they can share a particular work, or this is something that we have planned, and, the members are inclined to, pay attention to that because this is communication weekly from the elders.
I think getting to know your congregation as far as knowing people personally, if you don't know what people are involved in or what they need and don't even know where they were, it's hard to be an elder.
Yeah.
Again, it's like we said, it's we talked about before, you can excommunicate somebody, but if they never felt like they were there, you've done nothing.
Right. So there again, if you're going to communicate with people, it's helpful to know a little bit about the folks that you're trying to help and lead. Very good. We have two passages here as far as E. Let's get a couple helpers lined up. I would have put widows in a different spot, but I was a little short on space, so I just had to stick them there. Not that they're unimportant, but I just didn't have a really good place to put them on the outline. James 1:19, who'd like to take care of that in a little bit? Glenda, and then we'd also like to have Lois, if you would read Titus chapter 3, verse 2. Let's start with James 1, verse 19. Glenda? Okay, if you were an elder thinking in terms of communication, could you apply that verse to you? Let's break it down. What do we find first? All right, if you are trying to communicate to somebody, don't you want them to listen to you? If they're over there, and preachers have a little bit of a difficulty with this, if you've got 30 people streaming towards you, it's a little difficult to talk to everybody at once. So sometimes I will confess that I'm guilty of this. You're shaking a hand here, and you're trying to talk here, and you're trying to look over there at the same time. So if you ever have had one of those experiences, just realize it's the nature of the situation. It's not that I or some other preacher is uninterested in you. We're just trying to handle several things at once, and that doesn't always work out as well as we like. But quick to hear. If you're communicating with somebody, you want them to listen, and if they're ready to listen, if they are tuned in, clued in, we want to hear what you've got to say. That is going to be a great way to initiate communication. And that goes back to approachability that Ray mentioned. All right, what's the second thing there, Glenda? James 1:19.
Slow to speak.
Okay. What happens if you're talking to somebody, doesn't have to be an elder, and you start to say something? I know what you're going to say. It's already been decided. We've already got it figured out. How do you feel?
Like he must be a mind reader, too.
Yeah. Now, there may be a set of circumstances where you do that, and that's the right choice. But still, I had somebody the other day tell me a story, and then 3 hours later they told me the same story. Now, I'm not sure why they did that, but whatever the reason was, still, if you're telling the same story, now if you're doing that on a regular basis, you might appreciate some help. Sometimes as the years go by, we get a little more forgetful. But you know, who wants to be told again and again? Well, I heard that story already twice today. You know, bearing in mind Christian qualities, what do? Well, you go through it again, right? It's like having somebody in the nursing home, whether that's a friend or a loved one. You know, each time you're going to hear that same story. Okay, I'm going to hear it again.
One of the comments going on with it, Ray and I tend to tell a lot of stories, and you have a code word to keep us from rambling too much.
Well, if you remember the code word, that's good.
But the, when you're talking to people, I think part of that slow to speak is to absorb what they said. Don't just think you have the answer because you might have missed something. So that's a good point of listening through their whole part of the communication is listening to their whole story so you can give a good answer. We used to have that in the Marine Corps. Before you knock on this door, shut your mouth and put your mind to work. You know, so they're telling you, don't come off bumbling and know what you want. So I think that's a good part of it, is just that, to take in what they had just told you before you jump off and think you got the answer of what they're talking about.
I had a teacher. I was probably about 25, so it's been a few years back, but he made the point in class one day, a smart guy, never got his doctorate, but I mean just a brilliant man in so many ways, and we've even kept in touch over the years just because I liked him so much. But I remember him confessing to a class of students that he didn't listen very well. If you've ever taught someone, maybe it's even a child, as you're presenting information and then as you expect a response back, as that person is talking back to you, where's your mind typically?
Reaching ahead to the next thing you want to say.
Yes, you're thinking, okay, I'm receiving some information, a response is expected from me, therefore, not only am I having to process what you're saying, I'm also trying to formulate a reply to you. And that's pretty much the way that communication works. Because if you're not doing that, I mean, unless you're just a computer, you're probably not going to be too prepared to respond in some way. Well, in that process, you can be too focused on how you're going to respond, and you fail to really hear, as you mentioned. So number one, you don't answer the person's question. Number two, you don't get enough information. Or number three, you just really foul it up because you don't end up listening at all. So that's kind of a balancing act as far as trying to accomplish that. But elders, you know, ideally they're going to be people who hear. Sometimes if I sit down with somebody, if it's an office situation, the class situation, every once in a while, but, you know, we're talking about a marriage situation or we're talking about some other difficult set of circumstances, I actually tell them, I said, I want to grab a piece of paper and take some notes. And that way, that's helping me process the information, and maybe I need to go back and look at that information and point some things out, or that'll help me ask some additional questions. So, I mean, class is serious. But in this set of circumstances, I don't know that that's typically the best way for me to approach it. But like I say, in those other cases, you know, and I think too, note-taking has the advantage of telling people you're really trying to listen. And elders might do that as well. You know, sit down and make some notes. These are private things, or I'll shred them afterwards, but this is significant enough that, and I'd say that too, as far as communication. If you have somebody that says, let's sit down and talk about this, at least mentally, what does that do for you as far as this person is interested in me? Makes it seem more important, doesn't it? Makes it seem like your issue is going to be significant. So that's another thing that we can do as Christians in general, but elders too. You know, let's just not catch me here by the door and talk for a couple minutes. We can actually, if this is really important and you want to have some of my time, let's sit down and talk.
Back to one of your first points, and that was the individual that you start to talk to and they interrupt what you're saying. That usually indicates to me that person's got a preconceived idea of what this whole situation's about. And whenever that happens to me, in effect, I usually just want to stop the conversation right there because I know that it's not, there's a good chance it's not going to be discussed in the way that is beneficial.
Yeah. I can say there are some rare cases where it's not bad to interrupt someone for some reason, just kind of stop them. But typically, James 1:19, the principle's there. Swift to hear, slow to speak, two great communication principles that people generally appreciate. You still there, Linda?
Yeah.
Okay, you have a thought.
It's pointed out to you the law of brethren, every person. So,
Yeah.
To reach and be able to, and it needs growth and age and practice to achieve all these things.
Yeah. Generally, 18, 19, 20, you're not going to have people who are swift to hear and slow to speak. It's going to be the opposite. They're going to be quick to speak, and they're not going to do so well as far as holding the tongue. If you can read that verse one more time, there's still something else that we want to take from it.
I'm slow to anger. Now listen, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger.
Okay. If you're talking to somebody, again, it does not have to be a church-related situation, and they are not slow to anger, what do you feel when it comes to communicating with them? We talked about that before. We've already made a decision about that, and they just fly off the handle. You want to go back and see him next week?
Generally, I couldn't be any harder to talk to.
He's going to be hard to talk to?
Generally, I tend to avoid.
Yes, that's the kind of person. But if you have somebody that's behaving in that way, you begin to avoid them, then what does that do with the communication process? It shuts it down. So again, three very simple statements, three very difficult statements to practice on a regular basis. But when we think about elders and communication, to me, this would be a very helpful verse. Then Titus chapter 3, verse 2. Maybe not as powerful and as direct, but still I think it has some good points there that we can relate to what we're talking about.
To malign no one, to be uncontentious, gentle, showing every consideration for all men.
Okay. Gentle, not contentious, showing every consideration. Well, those were some of the things that we talked about. If, you know, for example, you talk to somebody and say, well, I just got a minute. If you talk to me, I might say that sometimes. You know, I'm heading out the door. There's been maybe a hospital situation. You know, call me on the cell. But I just don't have, you know, time to sit down right this moment because something else is vying for my attention that I need to respond to. But if you have someone that doesn't show that consideration, again, people can, you know, understand that. You know, the house is burning down. I can't stand here and talk. You know, there's some things where you would say, well, okay, that's understandable. But still, you know, you don't have to shout at people. You don't, you know, you can still end the call in a polite way. So when you think about elders communicating in this way, you've got people that want to interact with the elders. You've got people that want to interact with the shepherds and do a good work. Anything you want to add or ask before we talk about widows? Stan?
It's not, at least in my way of thinking, it's not inappropriate to say to somebody, I understand what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I'm not sure I have an answer right now. Mm-hmm. And I know in our fast-paced world, people want answers and they want them in a hurry. Sometimes that's not always the best way to do it. And to take some time and think about a particular subject and then get back with the individual is the appropriate thing to do.
It is, and that could be a Bible class situation. There are things that come up where the teacher might say, I need to study that, I need to think about that. It may be a home situation. You know, I've taken calls over the years where parents said this to their kids and then thought, I'm going to look at that a little bit more, and then went back and said, you know that conversation we had? I thought about that a little bit more. I've looked at that a little bit more. And to take that and to make kind of a second point that's somewhat related to this morning's sermon, what if you have elders that have made a decision which is a bad decision? And maybe not to the congregation, but at least to the elders, it becomes clear that they have given out some information or they've made a bad choice. How would some elders deal with that? Two ways, not... Both of them would not be correct.
Some might cover it up.
Yeah, some might say, we're not going to backtrack. We're going to try to cover it up. We're not going to go back and try to say, okay, we've come across some better information. We now know that's a bad idea, and we're not going to try to clean it up. We're just going to leave it and hope for the best. Well, the other option would be going to people and saying, you know, we've made this decision. We've tried this in the past. We're going to do it again, and we've come to the conclusion that it's not a good thing. Again, communication there. And you not only have communication, but you have what kind of communication?
Effective.
Well, and honest communication. I mean, it is effective because you're the elder, you're reaching out, and you're, or whether it's a parent-child situation, you know, we thought this, we believed this, we were headed in this direction, this was our thinking. You've given us some additional things to think about, and we're going to back up. So again, you get back to the approachability factor there. And they can't be wishy-washy. We've talked about that before, so there's got to be that firmness there. But at the same time, realize that you don't have necessarily all the answers or all the best answers, and that's why we talked about input in a previous class.
One thing I've learned as I got older is sometimes you can have that person answer their own question.
That's true.
You turn it back on them and say, so what would you do to make them think about their own problem instead of always having to go to what we call our parents or the fathers, leaders of the congregation, you might be able to work it out yourself. And I find that a lot of people, just like in politics or anything today, everybody complains about this, that, and the other. Okay, well, what would you do to change it? All of a sudden, they don't know what they want to do. They sure complain a lot. Uh-huh. And I've been guilty. So it's, I think when you turn it on somebody, it makes them own what they're trying to ask.
Uh-huh. Several years ago, I was thinking about becoming a teacher, professor in a college. And one of the things that I did to lock in some of my education was to take a short course. Short course, if you're not familiar with it, takes a lot of information and condenses it down into a period of about 2 weeks. So it's just kind of a summary course. And the course that I was in dealt with counseling. Fellow was an older, wiser preacher slash teacher. And in that counseling course, I picked up what I thought were some helpful things that paid in my mind for the course. And some of those things have helped me over the years. And one of the items was how we define counseling. When I went into that course, I thought, you know, counseling, if you're going to counsel somebody, you're going to give them a lot of advice. You know, you go to somebody that you think is, you know, older or wiser or has had some experiences that can be helpful to you. And he made the point in that course that that's really not, at least in his mind, and he's passed on since then, but that's not in his mind what counseling is. I don't know that he gave an exact percent, but thinking back to that course, I'd say that 80 to 90% of counseling is just listening. Because in many cases, when people come and ask for advice, they already know the answer. They know what's right. They may be fishing for, you know, if it's a moral situation, they're fishing for justification, and they want to make sure that you're going to verify that what they're not acknowledging, that is, they're involved with sin, is really right. So then, well, you know, all people do that, and then from a biblical standpoint, you can deal with those kinds of things. Or they've already made a decision and just don't have the courage to face up to it. But again, you know, you'll find as you deal with, I think, some counseling theories and so forth, that it's not so much me giving you advice, and that's sometimes how people regard counsel. Well, I'm just going to come in and give them all kinds of good ideas. Well, sometimes people need ideas. But counseling, a lot of times people have wrestled with this, they've thought about this enough where, more times than not, in my judgment, they've got the answer. They're just looking for someone to validate it.
Yeah, I think about Nathan and David and Bathsheba.
Yeah.
Nathan came to him with the story, and David didn't take him too long to figure out what he was talking about.
Yeah. You know, people are not stupid for the most part. When you have a series of facts, you give the information to people. Okay, now, sometimes we don't like the decision options that we have, but generally, okay, this makes the most sense, so this is what we need to do. But you do feel better sometimes if you're able to go through those items, those facts with somebody, and the person says, yes, you know, that is how I would read them as well, which that may not be the specific role of a counselor, but still you're looking for that validation, you're looking for somebody to come along and say, and David with the guilt, you know, he said his body was wasting away and so forth, that's back in, what, Psalm 34, something like that. And he recognizes that he just needed somebody to come in and kind of hold it up. And yeah, so you're right. Okay, let's pick up with a point about widows. We've had that here a little bit. And most congregations, I think, do suffer that as well. But what about when it comes to communication and widows? Where do we see some of the problems there? Paul recognized this when he wrote to the Corinthians. He said, if anybody, speaking of ladies, has a question, ask who? Your husband where? At home. So this is not a new problem. At least in some respects, this was taking place in the first century. There were some ladies who had some questions, and Paul said, okay, that needs to be dealt with at home. Now, it's kind of a different context, but at least the same general topic is under consideration by Paul in the Corinthian letter. How do we see that today? Think ladies can feel left out when it comes to communication?
Yes.
Okay. They can. And how would that work? What about... Okay.
You don't have a man there to hear what's going on, and nothing then is communicated to the congregation in any way or to the widows.
Okay.
They kind of feel left out.
Sure. You may have some young girls. You may have some single folks. You may have some widows. multiple categories there. There is no representation, if you will, in the elders meeting perhaps, or if you're in a business meeting arrangement, so you feel like, you know, I'm going to have to grab information from where I can get it. You know, we've got a church bulletin. And I do think church bulletins are helpful. They may not have everything, but at least for the most part, they're useful. Church calendars, again, that Palmers have done, I think that's also very, very useful because that gives you a general framework to work from. What about approachability, too? You think that if you're in a situation where you have a men's meeting, being able to approach some of those men would be helpful to you as a lady?
Sure.
Yeah. And we should be approachable in that regard. What about when we think about widows? And this happens in a lot of places. You have an elder, and this is kind of a different topic, and it's not exclusive with the church. But when you have a parent with younger children in the home, do you think every situation like that, the parents are going to communicate the exact same level of information to the kids? No. I mean, you're going to have some homes where the kids know about everything because mom and dad are really free in communication. Then you're going to have some other homes where the kids know almost nothing because mom and dad just really keep all that stuff quiet. Well, you find the same thing, at least this has been my experience in knowing several elders and the wives, you find a similar thing when it comes to the church. You're going to have some elders who communicate almost everything to the wives. And I mean, if you look at the elder, the wife is going to be kind of like a clone as far as knowing what's taking place. Then you find some guys in the middle. They don't want to overstress their wives or there's something else going on. So the elder and the wife, when it comes to spiritual things, there's some communication there, maybe on really important things, but there's some other things that the wife just never picks up from, at least through her husband. And then you have at the other end of the spectrum, there are some elders who, again, it's almost the CIA secrecy. You know, you're married to a spy and you almost know nothing about the guy's work or the lady's work. And that can happen in the church as well. You have an elder married to a woman and that wife knows almost nothing when it comes to spiritual things. Well, if you have, and I know that's a long way to get to this point, but if you have a situation where an elder is married to a wife and he's communicating at least some of the stuff or maybe almost all the stuff and he dies, how do you think that elder's wife is going to feel?
Lost.
She's not only lost her husband, but now she's lost a big part of the church communication she was getting as well. Now, if she was on the other end of the spectrum that we described, where there's not much communication, it's probably not going to seem that drastic. But you have those other two categories. So especially difficult can it be for a woman who is put in that particular spot. So when you are dealing with communication, you have, you know, several groups of people, and that would be one. What about our young people? That's a topic I've never heard discussed in a congregation. But do you think elders should be communicating with the young people? Yeah. But we get back sometimes to an assumption there where we think, oh, hey, the young people are just fine. We can kind of forget about them, avoid them. But when we talk about watching over the flock, we're not just talking about the young. We're not just talking about the, you know, medium range sheep. We're not just talking about the older sheep. We're talking about everybody in the congregation. So, as we said, communication is one of the most fundamental things that we have in life. It is very, very important. And there's probably no eldership that always gets it right. But this is something to pay attention to and do it on a regular basis, because if it's not done reasonably well, it's going to create some issues.
The young people are tomorrow's leaders.
Sure.
And so we have to communicate with them, keep them informed of what's going on, and keep them interested in training for the leadership.
Sure. Well, if they don't, and some congregations can do this, it's not really like you're part of the flock. But after you reach 22 and after you get a wife, and especially after you have a child, then you're part of the flock. Well, that's, you know, you're making some assumptions there, and you're treating some people in a way that you wouldn't want to be treated if you were in that situation. So, again, elders need to be mindful of everybody, but sometimes there are some things that can, you know, get lost in the process. So you're exactly right.
I think there is some congregations and some elderships that they think, okay, we've got the youth group, you know, they're doing the youth thing, and they're doing this, and they're doing that. You know, they'll go out and maybe help them a widow or a widower, you know, clean a lawn or clean a house or something like that. But whenever it comes to actually the workings of the church, be it financial, be it how the elders and congregation work together, be it cleaning of the building, anything like that. It's like, oh, the young people aren't interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that becomes a divide then, that it's hard to reach them when they do become 18, 19, 20, 21.
Yeah, and we just kind of assume that a certain time is going to reach where they're going to be swept into the flock and then everything is going to be great, even though we didn't lay the foundation for it way back when. I will not say it's never happened to my knowledge, but I will say it's been very rare. When you have a devotional and elders are available to go over and lead that devotional, it's almost like, well, why would they come over? You know, and elders here, well, you know, is the earth coming to an end? I mean, is the Lord about to return? So people do allow the kids to kind of, you know, fall off. Well, we've got a youth group, as you said, and those kinds of things, so they'll be fine. Everything will work out. But again, they're shepherds over the flock. Anything else? Bonnie?
I think, we spent a lot of time with Samantha yesterday, and she spent the night with us, and we had a lot of good conversation with her. But she was telling us, you know, she came to the Ladies' Day meeting that we had, and she was telling us yesterday about what all she was going to be involved in with Ladies' Day. So, I think the kids, we were real pleased to see that she wanted to be involved with what's going on here at our congregation.
Well, they are the next generation. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have that foundation, and we've got lads to leaders, you know, with Ireland and those kinds of things, and if they're not trained up, you know, you're just expecting that they're just going to magically fill those roles at some point without any kind of consideration of the earlier years. And, you know, it's almost like a parent. You know, you just kind of assume, you don't do anything in the home to train and help, and all of a sudden our kids are going to be faithful and great servants of God. Well, good luck with that. I mean, that's not a biblical model, and a lot of people have tried that and failed. Okay, let's think about hypocrisy. Well, there's one more thing here. There is typically some difficulty in getting, when it comes to communication, too much information out or too little. And that's true for parents and everybody else. So there is that balancing act, and if elders are talking to the flock, communicating publicly and privately, that should work out pretty well. Hypocrisy. Matthew 6, verse 5. Anybody turned over there by chance? Matthew 6, 5? Okay. If you'd read it, Jeff.
And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are. For they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward.
Okay, let's discuss how prayer can be hypocritical. I'm going to probably put my foot into it in just a second, but I'll let you see if you want to say anything first.
I think sometimes in public prayer, especially the person leading the prayer might give the indication of righteousness that isn't real.
Yes, and how do they do that?
To some extent, like the Pharisee in the story Jesus told, thank you that we don't do these things. I'm glad that we're here today to honor you. It's always a praise of themselves.
Yes, you have this speech. Now, again, here's where I may put my foot in it a little bit. We don't know a person's heart. Let's bear that in mind. However, you do or you can see actions that make you wonder a little bit if there's not a heart issue in some cases. I think we avoid this here as a congregation. I can't think of anybody that I could point to and say, wonder about that a little bit. But you can be at a congregation, or if you're visiting there, or maybe you just stop in and you're talking to this guy, and then all of a sudden, when it comes... Well, let me word it this way. Do you have sometimes people who are different as far as their public and their private persona?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's like light and darkness. I mean, it's so different. All right, now, there can be some reasons for that, and maybe a person is just more outgoing in public, private around the house, those kinds of things, or vice versa. But can't you sometimes have that in the church as well? Where you have a person who is this way, but when it comes time to leading a prayer or preaching a service, preaching a sermon, you know, that it's almost like you've got a different person up there. And that different person comes off as very holy, the sanctimonious attitude, and the kinds of things that Brian was talking about. Don't you see that sometimes?
Yes.
Oh, God! And, you know, they just almost, like I say, turn into a different individual. Do you think you could have an elder do that kind of thing?
You probably wouldn't even know it unless you were in the family unit.
That's true.
Because it's very sly when this happens.
Yeah.
Trust me, I know.
Yeah. You do have that. Sometimes it's going to be more obvious than at other times, but you can have that. Jesus recognizes that and specifically associates it with prayer. Thus, we ask in 2b, what might elders do to leave the impression or cause people to conclude that they're hypocrites?
Still fighting the sin and everything, but there are things that are more on guard when you're being constantly bombarded with sin stuff that's around you. Where when you're in services, you feel and can tell there's more of a backing just with those that believe the same way you do. So I say in some cases, we are going to be a little different outside. We're trying to be just like we are when we're here. I mean, that would be the perfect thing, that you're always honoring and worshiping God and everything that you say and do, but nobody's perfect.
Environment does have a factor. For example, if you're at the ball game, it's probably going to be a different environment than you have at worship. So there will be a slight change in behavior. We change our dress sometimes too for different actions. You know, if you're going to be out there in the golf course, you're probably going to dress a little differently than you might for a nice meal. Those
it's
kinds of things.
That not that we're sinning out there. It's just that when you're in services, you are to give God the honor, and you should have a focus on God. Only at that time, from what I see.
Okay.
But like I said, it's not that you're actually sinning when you're outside, but you have a different. You got to deal with a lot of different kind of people that are very harsh and very brash, and so you do the best you can to talk to these individuals. But it doesn't mean that sometimes you don't step up and just say, "Hey, wait a minute." You might get a little angry with somebody that you want at the church, you know, at with your brothers and sisters. So just thought I'd throw that out there.
Okay. Anybody else?
Even sometimes the way we dress can indicate, well, I'm better than somebody else.
Okay. Dress would be one of the things. You know, for example, again, I want to be careful there because elders may say this isn't a show. This is just, you know, worship and kind of going along with what Doug said. I want to look my best for God, so I wear a suit and tie. But there can be some people that do use dress. Paul recognized that in 1 Timothy, wasn't it, chapter 2, where he talked about, you know, the women, modest dress and so forth. In that case, it seems like they were overdressing. But there again, you know, it's we're going to have the gold and the braided hair and all that stuff, and we're going to be a real showpiece. And that wasn't the way that they were typically dressing. So dress could potentially be an area. How else? Elders are guilty of hypocrisy. Dress, maybe the way they talk at services.
Being clicky.
Okay. All right. And we'll deal with that a little later in the lesson, but if you are an elder, there should be, and that's true for all of us, impartiality. But you know, if you're acting one way, or do you think that President Obama has served as an example of this? He's indicated that there are some world leaders that he just about wants to puke because of, after he talks to him. I just can't stand the guy. Well, again, if you are an elder and you go up and you act like a guy is your best friend, are you being honest? No. You think as an elder there might be some people who make you sick? You just want to throw up being around them. Be honest. You think there's some people that you might find really distasteful?
Sure.
I think that's true. Well, if you are in that situation, I mean, we're still commanded to love all people. So he would have that obligation. But still, if a man went up and acted like he's your best friend, wouldn't that be hypocritical? It would, because that's not the case.
You're like, what's the agenda?
Yes, there would be those kinds of questions that would surface as well. So should be kind and courteous and loving to all, but still to recognize that fact too. Marcia.
If the elders expect the congregation they're serving to do things that they're not willing to do, or expect more of the congregation than themselves, I don't know if it's in that way or not.
Yeah, we're all servants of God. We should be, you know, ready to do whatever is needed, whatever. Somebody picks
come
up.
Come to the work day.
Yes, come to the work day. And then, you know, he's staying home watching TV or going out to the golf game.
Right.
Those would be things, too, where you'd look at and you'd say, you know, that, you know, you're telling me this, you're giving me this standard. And Jesus, Matthew chapter 23, talked about how they, you know, people like the scribes bound heavy burdens on people and they didn't want to lift one finger. And I mean, it's scathing hypocrisy. So that's probably out of all the examples that we have given thus far, and the others are good, but that's probably the finest. Where you've got the elders saying, this is the standard, this is what we need to do, but we're exempt from it. We're not going to be involved in that kind of thing. And that can happen. Heaven is certainly not happy with that kind of activity. So let me quickly toss out this final point here on 2C. How should hypocrisy with an elder or all the elders be handled? Let's use Marcia's example. You know, you've got a work day, and you know, again, maybe the first day or two that you have, maybe 1 year or maybe over a 2 year period, they don't show up. They don't want to do anything. So how do you handle that hypocrisy? Well, I think there should be some communication there. And maybe if, you know, you have one out of four elders that's involved with that, that would be a good thing to maybe work through that one elder. But if you've got all the elders, again, you know, to talk to them. And if you do that, this is putting it back on the side of the person who's not an elder. How do you want to communicate with that elder? Why, you dirty dog? You scumbag. We were out there slaving away and you didn't come and show up. Well, if you communicate in that, what about that in that way? What about James 1, verse 19? What do we read there? Well, that was
slow to speak,
quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. So that's not only the responsibility of an elder, but that's also a responsibility that we have in communicating with elders. And I know, I could name some names of people over the years who have talked to elders in a really bad way. I mean, some non-Christians who were angry would have talked better to them. But you know, again, they just come out and really, with accusations that are without foundation and really go after them, hook, line, and sinker. And it's been really ugly.